I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
And a proud member of the West Side Men's Group.
Nice.
Thank you very much. So good to be a member of a group, a home group. That's exactly right. You know, what's neat for me in this group is that I have my old home group in here, which is the 11-step group. Woo! And then I have the my current home group, which is the West Side Men's Group.
Nice.
And I'm going to tell you something. It's nice. It's nice to be a member of a home group, and it was nice to be always loved and supported, and those guys know you. Tonight's going to have to be a little bit different. I'm actually going to have to be rigorously honest. Not only is my wife here, but Patsy and Lindsay are here, and Wendy's back. So although there'll be a lot of talking from her table, she does know my entire story, so I'll have to keep all of it very on point, since those people I've known for 15 years. So I'm going to do my best not to, expound upon. You know, when I'm standing up here, and have you guys seen The Gladiator? Have you seen the movie The Gladiator? And there's that scene when it's the first time before he goes out. And you know, that they're getting their weapons, and there's a gate, and you hear commotion out in the Colosseum. And the first guy, he's real nervous. He's peed himself. And the gladiator, though, he's getting himself ready. You know, when Jimmy's doing the announcements, and you guys are doing all the announcements, and you look over at me, and I look like a kid in the candy store, it's because I'm putting, like, some sand on my hands. I'm going like this in the background. Because for me, being up here is, like, the greatest thing. Other than, of course, being married to my wife, which is the first greatest thing. But being up here, carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, telling you guys what God has done in my life through a broken vessel, is the way that the gladiator felt when he was getting ready to come out there. And I, you know, if it was up to me, I'd run through the doors and just start, you know. That's how much it's exciting to me. You know, there's one guy that is as excited as I am, and he's here tonight. It's Jonathan. He's coming up on 3 years, and every time we see each other in meetings, it's, you know, God has done so much for us. I don't understand coming to a meeting and being, you know, I don't understand sitting there with my jaw down. You know, I can get in my own head, and I can start talking about the problems that I had today, and I had some problems. Anybody have some problems today? Anybody have some problems? I had some problems today. I want to tell you, a lot of those problems did actually circulate all around me. They were about me and my little plans and my designs, and I had some issues today. But when I come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and other meetings like this, if I leave my stuff at the door and turn off my cell phone, that's a big deal right there. It's a big deal, because people that can't turn off their cell phones in meetings haven't made a decision yet. I'm not saying that it doesn't make you a bad person. You just haven't made a decision. You haven't made a decision that there's someone else running this other than you. You know, like my friend that happens to be in this room here tonight talks about when he used to drink loudmouth soup and know that the entire world centered around him. If you come into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and for the next 45 minutes you can't turn off your cell phone, you haven't made a decision, at least in my estimation. So I'm going to tell you that I turned off my cell phone. I put it on airplane mode. I don't want anything buzzing, or I don't want anything to get in the way of his message. The other thing I want to say before we get into step four is, you know, I come up here every week and I take a moment of silence. And, you know, one of my friends, he's a great public speaker, and you know, he's probably taken all those Anthony Robbins ceremonies, you know, those whatever those things are, though. What are those called, Mark? Seminars. And he's a great public speaker, and he's just a great guy. And he said, you know, it's very effective when you come up here to the front of the room and you pause and you're quiet, everyone focuses on you. It's just a great technique. Let me tell you what I'm doing. That is a great Anthony Robbins technique, I'm sure. But what I'm doing is I'm saying to God, please show up. Please don't leave me alone. I'm up here beseeching the creator of the universe that please don't have it be me talking up here in front of 200 of my closest friends. Please make sure that you show up. So I'm not using any techniques other than petrifying fear and begging the creator to show up with me at the podium. So let's just get that out there. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Now, someone said to me the other day, how are you going to make that exciting? I mean, I get, you know, Steve, everyone gets that you love step three. You split it up in 2 weeks. By the way, Wendy, we split up step three in 2 weeks. So it was very exciting. We had the first part was making a decision. And we had the second part and how you follow through on that. And I explained that I don't believe that step three is about, you know, some of the things that I've heard in the rooms is step three is just about that you've made a decision to continue on the steps. That's all it is. Just about you making a decision to continue on the steps. I don't believe that. I don't believe that, and the big book doesn't support that. The big book says it's much more than making a decision to continue on the steps, and we're going to get into that. Making a decision to turn our... Come on. Making a decision to turn our will and our lives over is a lot more than just making a decision to continue on the steps. One of the ways it shows up is that we continue to go on the steps. One of the ways it shows up is that we're not so concerned about our own little plans and our designs. Those are ways that it shows up. But making a decision, as we spoke about last week, is exactly aligned with making a decision for the whole rest of your life. That you don't have to run the show. That if you've screwed it up to this point, that God can restore what the locusts have stolen. That there's a whole new thing coming as long as you're not in control. At least that's what I believe. Now, I want to back all this up with some facts. So we're going to go to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to back up a little bit. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed. He just provided what we needed. God just provides what you need. You don't have to do anything. Matter of fact, all you need to do is come in, pick up a white chip. You can act the way you want. You can talk the way you want. You can disrespect the way you want. Because as long as you have God in your life, he provides what you need. No, that's not what it says. You see, that's the settling on the crouton of the buffet program. Now, you can have that. You know, you can have that. You can have settling on the crouton, and you get your fork and your spoon, and you get your napkin. You go up to the buffet, and you go up, and you see this buffet's long, and you grab your crouton, and you stick it on your plate. And you don't want anyone else getting your crouton. No one else wants your crouton. Because, you know, and this is not my line. I want to tell you that when you've found a new freedom and a new happiness, when you've stepped into the fourth dimension, when you have a skip in your step and things are going good in your life and you know that it's not about you and it's about him, and then you go to this line and it says, we had a new employer being all powerful. You're not one of these guys or gals in the room where you can actually settle for a crouton and be happy. You're never going to just be okay with settling for a crouton. Which, what I mean by settling for crouton is just being miserably sober. Miserably sober. And if you've been around a while, you've seen a lot of long-term, miserably, so I wouldn't say a lot, but you have definitely seen some miserably sober, I'm sober, by the grace of God. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Ah! You've seen them. You might even have been one of them. But that's not a new freedom and a new happiness. I mean, that's great. I mean, that's great to haven't had a drink in 76 years. That's fantastic. I love that. I think that's great. I'm signing up for the whole package. You see, the next line is where it separates, in this room, the men from the boys and the women from the girls. Let me give you the next line that nobody likes to read. It's just, you just come in, you stay sober, you give God 2 minutes in the morning, you give him 2 minutes at night, and you expect a life beyond your wildest dreams. Because after all, you're not drinking. After all, you hadn't had a drink in 12 years. I don't know why life is just not perfect for you. There's a lot of people in the world that haven't had a drink in 12 years. There's a lot of people that never had a drink, and their lives are not fantastic. It's not a prerequisite for an unbelievable life that you don't drink. But however, the next line is, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Wow. Now, we were talking about this last night. I'm not just going to continue to go over it, but I think it's important for us to realize that if we kept close to him and performed his work well, we can just be relying on him. How would you like that? You like that? Can I get an agree?
Oh, yeah.
Would you agree with that? Do you want to be relying on if we performed his work well? I sure do. As we felt a new power. Oh, I got to just stop for a second. Let's stop the tapes and the recording devices. Paulie, you know, Paulie, I'm alcoholic. You're off the hook. You're all off the hook. All right, mental defectors. Follow the bouncing ball. Follow the bouncing ball. Two Jews walk into a, you know. Paulie calls me this weekend, and he's getting the tapes. Thank you to Larry and Eric Steinberger, who's sending him up the tapes. And he's getting the tapes, and so he does this. He leaves me this message on my phone of the worst preacher you've ever heard from the 700 Club, the worst in person, you know, just does me on the phone, but like flattens me out. So I just wanted to give him an honorable mention for the worst impression ever. And to my Jewish friends, Happy New Year and Happy Holidays. And thanks for being in my life. And thank you, God, for putting men in my life that have come before me, that have shown me the path, that continue to be in my life, that continue to be in this room, that show me how it is to be a man in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the ladies are amazing too. But the men in this program have showed me what it is to be a man. I didn't understand how it was to be a man. I'm going to get back to step four, but I want to tell you a little about it. You know, I was sober 5 years, and I thought a man was every character minus Big P on The Sopranos. I thought every character on The Sopranos was a real man. And at 5 years of sobriety, 4 years of sobriety, on a Sunday night, that was like, the way that Sunday morning is for me now, which is, I'm in a different place on Sunday mornings, is the way that Sunday nights on HBO was for me. Now I looked at those guys and I said, those are real men. Disrespecting women, and they don't have any respect for the law, and the way they see it is the way that it is, and if they don't like it, they just give someone a whack. And in my fourth and fifth year of sobriety, on Sunday nights, the phone get turned off like it does in church on Sunday mornings, and as soon as that episode would end, I would get a cigar in my mouth, go into the same car that he has on the show, similar car like that, SUV, the same thing, put on my Sopranos t-shirt, go around town with my window down, playing the Sopranos soundtrack. If you don't know what song I'm talking about, it's when he's driving up on the turnpike and he's about to go through the turnstiles. And at 4 years sober, I was praying that you would say something to me when at a light, or look at me funny at a light. That's what I thought a real man was. And I would drive like slow to make sure you would say. I'd look at like 5 miles an hour in a 40, just puffing away. And that And then shortly after that, at 7 years sober, I pick up my medallion at the 11-step group, and I decide that drinking, after not having a drink in my system for 7 years, that drinking wouldn't be a big deal while I was eating Chinese food. I would have a little glass of sake rice wine. And then, through utter humiliation, complete degradation, not being able to get sober, four treatment type of things, insane psychiatric flaw, detox after detox after detox after detox, one stay down in Miami that I told you about last week in transitions. She likes that. She likes the story. This is going to go good on tape. It's very hard to be very serious. I was about to drop a tear before that. That's all out the door right there. I couldn't get sober, and then my last stay after transition after six felonies is a psychiatric floor, where I call Myron and I say to him, I can't do this anymore, and he says, then just give up. Just give up. You don't have to do this anymore. You see, when Paul Lee says you're off the hook, it's because you're really off the hook. You know, 7 weeks into treatment, $35,000, I used within 5 minutes of leaving that treatment center. Within 5 minutes. But when I finally gave up on the third floor of the Fort Lauderdale Hospital, when I finally gave up and moved in with my close friends here that are Mason and Eddie and Anthony and Joel was in the other house who happens to be here. Five of us are in this room tonight that we're all in a halfway house together 8 years ago. So if you think that maybe you're in a halfway house or just starting out, or the guys you're living with in a sober house, you think that they might not be the guys that you hang around with for the rest of your lives, one day at a time we've hung out with ourselves through thick and through thin, and we've had some really bad times. We've watched each other come in, we've watched each other, some of us go out, we've watched each other come back in. We were together when Sandy and I lost our only pregnancy. And believe me, you don't want to go through that alone. And they were there for me. When we had our car accident just 9 months ago, and I was laying in intensive care with my sternum cracked and my vertebrae cracked and my back cracked, and I couldn't breathe. They drove down from Delray and they got me whatever I needed. So if you think that when it says that he, God, will give you the fellowship you crave, and if you're craving that type of fellowship, he will give that to you if you show up and you get involved. So for the last 8 years, we've been involved in each other's good lives and some very, very bad parts. But we're still here. We're still trucking along. So praise God for that. I was just reminiscing over the years of... This was my first speaking engagement. I was 7 months sober, and this was the first room that I spoke in when all these guys were there. I think even Joel was there. It was 11 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. And I wasn't living it with Sandy. Sandy had asked me to take a temporary leave of residence to a halfway house in the area. She was redecorating. And... I want to tell you that if you do align yourself, when you do align yourself with the Creator, amazing things will happen. I can tell already that this is not going to be fluid, this meeting tonight. This is not going to be a timeline. You know what? We always got step five to rehash everything. We'll talk about that next week. I called my sponsor and I said to him, Jerry, I feel like I'm going to be using... I'm having a tough time. And he said to me, I want you to start praying again on your knees. He knew I used to pray on my knees. And, you know, I had been through a lot. I was on four or five different drugs that they had put me on. I've always been prescribed bipolar drugs. I've been prescribed bipolar drugs since I'm 21 years old. I was on lithium when I was 21, and I've been on every type of... I mean, I'm sure you couldn't have told... when you saw me over here, like getting ready for the gladiator, when I couldn't sit down. So, you know, I've always been kind of a high energy, and I got put on, every known SSRI and lithium and all that stuff since the age of 21. From the first time I did this thing called an MMPI, which is a test to see if you're off, And it's the test is MMPI, which is Minnesota something PI. Rick probably tell you what it is, but it has something to do with Minnesota. And I took it in Minnesota. So I took the test in Minnesota, and it's done by people in Minnesota. And then I could tell just when they were looking at the results, when the nurse in the facility went like this. I could tell that wasn't going to be like a straight across the board, you know. You're from Minnesota too, right? No. So she went like this. Oh, lithium would be good for this young man. So they put me on lithium. Where was I going with that? It was good, but I don't know where it was. Bipolar? Exactly. That was part of the problem. Well, winning me. Meds. Absolutely. Third floor. Always been on them. I met these guys when I walked into the halfway house, and I had a full bucket of meds. Not a shoebox, it was a Tupperware box. And no heckling from the crowd, thank you. It was a Tupperware box full of meds. And my psychiatrist said to me, Denise, amazing young, amazing woman, she said to me that you will always need to be on meds. It's not, this is not embarrassing. People that are diabetic, they're going to need to be on insulin. If you have something wrong with your thyroid, you're going to need to be on that type of stuff. So don't be embarrassed. You just need to take them, and things will get better for you. And that was back in 2002, and she was right. I did need to take them for a while. But then as I started to align myself with a power that was so amazing and so wonderful and so much greater than everything that I had ever heard before in the rooms, although I was around incredible people, although I was in an incredible group called the 11th Step Group, which is about God, I always heard about God, and I always talked about God like I knew God, but I didn't know God. And I'll tell you one of the reasons why. Because I never did a searching and fearless moral inventory. Because when I set out to tell my defects of character to another human being, I didn't actually follow the lists. I didn't go through resentments first. I didn't then go through sexual conduct. I started to do my own fourth step inventory. I did like most of us in here. I started to think about my own defects, and I thought I could write them down one at a time. And really, a half a page later, I was pretty much done. And my sponsor said to me in the early days, which was Myron, he said to me, I don't think a half a page, considering the way you act sober, is going to suffice for your four-step inventory. It does say searching and fearless. I didn't really see that many people that I resented. I had kind of worked through a lot of that childhood stuff, you know, through my father and my mother and my sister and a lot of kinds. I never resented my sister, but maybe I did. And sorry, sis, if you're listening to this. But I wrote some of it down. But that was just the first part of the resentment. I never did a searching and fearless moral inventory. And when you don't do a searching and fearless moral inventory, you're still full of, I was still full of a lot of garbage. I'm still walking around in meetings, and I'm carrying garbage. They said that sunlight of the Spirit, that will set you free. But if you have so much stuff on your windows that sunlight can't get in, then you don't know about that freedom. When they talk about a new freedom and a new happiness and, well, we were reborn, that is only comes from actually letting some of that stuff go. And what I was doing in the program, and as my friends that are in here tonight will attest to that, is I was talking about God, and I was believing in God, and I was doing what I wanted to do. I would get on my knees in the morning and I would say, God, please, now I remember where I was. I would say, God, please take my drugs and my alcohol away. I wish I had the wireless tonight so I can show you how it was. It was like I would get on my knees. Let's see if we can do this. Let's pretend that's knees. Okay. I would get on my knees and I would say, God, please take away my desire to use drugs and alcohol. And please make me to be of maximum service. And then as I was getting up from my knees at 45 degree angle, I took everything back except for that. Which means my behavior in the program, my behavior around town, my behavior when I got alone with a female, this is before I was married, and I do say that to be truthful, was not the same behavior that when I was raising my hand and saying, Steve, I was an alcoholic. It was a total different behavior. It was like I was one way in the rooms and another way outside the rooms. My mouth inside the 11-step group was totally different than my mouth inside the parking lot of the 12-step house. You see, if you haven't made a decision and then you don't follow it up with action, and the action that it says, let me just read this line to you. Next, we launched on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us have never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect. When they say that line there, when they say, though our decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God was a vital, crucial step, it doesn't mean anything because faith without works is dead. Do you understand what I'm saying? Making a decision and not doing anything about it doesn't mean anything. Maybe that's that three frogs on a log thing that they were talking about. That one frog made a decision to jump off the log, and which one jumped off the log? None of them. Now I can see where they got that frog on the log thing. Because faith without works is dead. It says here it could have little permanent effect unless, at once, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us from Him. Our liquor was just a symptom. How many people in here get that? That our drinking and our drugging is just a symptom of stuff that was going on way long before that. Yeah. I hadn't had a drink till 12. At 5 years old, I was self-will run riot. I told you the story about when kids were spinning the thing around in the playground. They were spinning it around and spinning around. Everybody was, wee, wee, wee. And I wanted to spin it the other way. And I did, to watch the kids go, woo, woo. And watch him fly off the thing. That was me at 5. I was way before ADHD, but believe me, if they had that category, that would have been pinholed right there. So I was self-will run right. By the time I took a drink, that was instantaneous relief. I needed to have a drink at 12. When the first time I took a pill that was for an ear infection, codeine, whatever, and it was for an ear infection, and that thing hit my system, and for the first time, my parents saw me calm. My mother was like, how's your ears? Maybe you need another pill. I'm joking, Mom. I'm joking. I know she will. She's tough. I just started thinking about my parents. My dad's in surgery right now. So I just want to take a moment just to think of Stan and know that everything's going to come out okay. And Dad, as soon as you get out, I want to let you know that we're thinking about you tonight. My dad called me today before he goes into surgery. And it's a 2-day surgery. He's going in for a surgery for his heart tonight. And then tomorrow he's going in for a different part of his body. And he says to me, before he goes into surgery, listen to my dad. This is a guy that couldn't stand my voice. I mean, couldn't stand my voice. When I used to bring up topics at the dinner table, I could see his face be like this. When I won this competition in school there was this competition in school which was, I know you probably won't believe this, but it was public speaking. And I had joined up for this class because I heard you could get out of class and go up to the conclave in upstate New York. And I hadn't studied for any of my tests, and I was walking by this classroom, and I was trying to get this young kid, Jimmy, kind of looked like you, a young, good-looking kid, and I was like trying to get him to come out and go drinking with me. And he says, come in this DECA club, come in this club, and then we'll go drinking. So I sat in the club, and I found out that you could get out of school if you signed up for this club. But all the real categories in this business club were taken. So I signed up for a job interview competition. It was like all the real students took other stuff. But I was, you know, always like, I told you that good hair gel, a smile, and a pair of Cavariccis I thought could get me through anything. So I probably had a lot of gel on that day. And I went in there and I signed up for going and speaking out and doing job interview competition for this business club, for DECA Club. And I go and I sign up for it and I win Long Island. I win all of Long Island. But that was just a one-day thing. When you win, they send you up to the conclave in upstate New York. So I go up there with booze and my shampoo bottles filled with booze and pot. And all these kids are good kids. I mean, really good kids. And I'm like that Ferris Bueller kid. I'm like the bad kid. But I'm getting 3 days off with a written thing. And I win state of New York. The entire state of New York. The first time ever in my school that anyone ever won. I was in the paper, and I got a scholarship to a nursing school. I don't know how that worked exactly. I guess most of the girls win that competition. And I didn't actually go in the paper because my self-esteem is so low that when they were announcing the winners for Long Island, out of 4,000 kids, I didn't show up for the award ceremony because I always knew I would never amount to anything. And so in the paper is another kid that stands up on the Olympic thing with my name on it, but someone else received it. I say all that to say that when I came home to tell my father that I won, he had the same look on his face his whole life, like this. Because he always said that my voice, that I like to speak just to hear myself speak. And my voice used to drive him crazy. 8 years ago when I was dying inside of my garage, and he came down to save me with my wife, and then they retired and started to work at my store at the flea market to keep my business open. My mother's a retired doctor, my father was in retail. They came and started working with my beautiful wife to keep my business open. And then my father started taking me to meetings, and he started showing up at meetings, if you guys remember. And then coming to see me pick up my 1 year medallion, and my 2 year medallion, and my 3 year medallion. And then saw that I had actually dedicated my life to this program instead of just talked about this program. Then in about my 4th year of sobriety, my father, when they come down, they started going to my home group with me. And then in my 5th year of sobriety, we started a Bible study, which is like a 12-step Bible study, and they started coming to that group with me. And then they started going to church with my wife and I. And when my parents come down, we go on Tuesday mornings, my father and I, we go to a 7 a.m. Bible study. We go to an 8:30 meeting over at Victory at the AA. At 10 a.m., the two of us with Doug, the three of us go over to Bark, and we take a meeting into 10 o'clock in Bark. And my father can't get enough of hearing me talk. He can't get enough hearing me talk because I'm not talking about anything other than him. And today, before he went into surgery, he called up and he said, everything's going to be fine, and please don't forget to send me the tape. My father's going in for surgery. Open heart. Not open heart, but open chest. They're putting in the change in his pacemaker. And he calls me today, to say to me, don't forget to send me the tape. Your mother and I, we hang on to every word on Wednesday nights. We can't wait to hear you. Now, how does that happen? How do you get from one place where nobody wants to hear you and you're the laughing stock of your family, and tomorrow my sister, who's also in a program, a 12-step program, who also couldn't stand to hear me because I was so full of it, that they'll all be listening to the tape of tonight. How does that happen? Only to him. If you align yourself with him. If you align yourself with him. That's the only way that kind of stuff can happen. Because believe me, for a lot of years, and Sandy will tell you, my wife is from Colombia, and she had never seen Christmases like we had. In her house, they like, on Christmas Eve, they wear special clothing and they eat special food and they sing and they have this thing for 9 days called La Novena. And what is it called?
Novena.
And it's beautiful. In my house, we're Italians from New York, originally from Brooklyn. So in my house, we don't sing. We throw stuff. So I was sober. I'm sober. I met my wife when I was 3 years sober, and she couldn't believe it. Her parents don't speak a word of English. When they came here on Christmas and they heard us, my family and I talking, my sister, my parents, and me, and I'm 3 years sober, the look on her, they didn't understand what was going on. We were saying like, pass the mashed potatoes and how's the weather, but the way we speak was so aggressive and so violent that her parents were like this. They thought at any time blood chips and machetes were coming out. Fast forward to a life that has been submitted to God, a life that has been left to Him. Fast forward 7 years later, and our Christmases are all about Him. our time together is all about him. We haven't thrown a mesh. We haven't thrown a baked potato. God willing, knock on wood, we haven't thrown a baked potato at each other in 9 years. 9 years. Let me tell you, we had a lot of vegetable issues in my house. And a lot of times where, and we're talking about, I want to point something out to you, just in case you think that everything can be blamed on drugs and alcohol. We're talking about everyone in my family is sober. And we were having some serious issues during the holidays. But now, my family's sober and in GA and in OA and in Gammonon, which is the program for people that are with, like Al-Anon, and then my wife is in Al-Anon, and I'm in AA and NA and 12-step fellowships. And I'm in every A that I, you know, whatever A, I'm in. I'm in. God, sobriety, I'm in. Bring me home. My father, let me just finish up by saying, my father can't wait to get down here next month so that the three of us can start on our Tuesday morning missions going into Bark again. And he can't wait to sit with these guys on Wednesday nights where we talk about God and the big book and the book that was written before the big book. I mean, is that an unbelievable blessing? Can I just get a round of applause for that? You can't orchestrate that. You can't orchestrate that. You can't make that stuff up. I mean, there's four people in here tonight that were at my wedding. They'll tell you, you can't go from there to here with your own power. The only thing that I was concerned with at the wedding, of course, marrying my beautiful wife, but I wanted the ice sculptures to be perfect and the cigar rollers to be perfect and the photographer to, where is the photographer? The photographer to be perfect, and I wanted the people to be perfect, and I wanted the dresses to be perfect, and I wanted the suits to be perfect, and I wanted and I wanted and I wanted, and I drove myself crazy. And it was shortly after that, when we were on a honeymoon in New Orleans, that I decided that I wanted to have a drink. You see, left to our own devices, even in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you are doing it your own, you will actually need to have a drink. Listen, there's some of people inside in here that when I'm around you and I hear you at Lester's, I think you're drinking. And that's the way I used to be. You know, I hope that when people are sitting next to the table next to us in Lester's, I hope that they're thinking, wow, those guys really sound great. I hope they say, I wonder what great organization they belong to. Listen, if we're in Lester's and people have to move their children to another table, which program are you in? If I can't take my wife to any function that we have, where is it that rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path? What path are you on? This program saved my life. I take it seriously. I don't take me seriously, but I take this seriously. I take my relationship with God seriously. I want to make sure that the same guy that made the decision to drink after 7 years, the same guy that decided to play cops and robbers with his friend in the neighborhood that shot him in the eye, that same guy that makes those decisions, the same guy that decided to sell ID cards at a flea market because one police officer said it was okay, and then I got arrested from the national task force, that same guy that makes those decisions sober, I don't want that guy running my life again. The same guy that used to think when I first met my wife and she was only my fiancé that it was okay to talk like the Sopranos to her because she needed to listen to me. And I used to have that face on. I'll be honest, in this specific instance, I don't think it's funny because I wasn't funny. I look back and I listen to the words that I said to my wife before I actually made a decision to follow God, and it turns my stomach. I haven't seen past season 2 of The Sopranos. That's my decision. I already lived The Sopranos for 32 years of my life. I don't need any more bad information. I was already 5 years sober and headbutting people inside Alcoholics Anonymous. I already lived in those shoes. I already had that pit of inside my stomach, inside AA. I already had the anxiety every day and woke up in the morning and said, had more anxiety than I knew what to do with because I was running the show. Can you imagine if I'm running the show, if you're running the show, The same people that, if the same person that got you into AA all of a sudden takes over your show again, whew. I want to make a decision, and I want to make sure that that decision is based on fact. And also when this moral inventory comes in, I want to make sure that it's searching and fearless. And I want to tell you something. You want to know how to do a fourth step? I found out tonight, all of it is in the book. I was relying on these lists and these downloaded PDFs from the internet. All the stuff about the fourth step is in the book. They have designed this book, this big book, to teach you how to do the fourth step. All you need to do in doing the fourth step is do it. If you say you've made a decision to turn your will and your life over, and then it says, and then at once, it's followed by rigorous action, just do it. Because next week when we talk about the miracles that go on in step five, next week is going to be magical when I tell you what happens in that. I want to read you one line before we close. These instincts that we're talking about here tonight, I just love this line. So I'm going to read it. And I know we're going to go over, and I'm sorry. Yet these instincts, so necessary for our existence, often far exceed their proper functions. Powerfully, blindly, many times subtly, they drive us, dominate us, and insist upon ruling our lives. Our desires for sex, for material and emotional security, and for an important place in society often tyrannize us. When thus out of joint, man's natural desires cause him great trouble, practically all the trouble there is. No human being, however good, is exempt from these troubles. So that means especially this room. No human being, no matter how good, is not going to have problems of defects of character. So write them down, follow the lists, and next week we'll talk about getting rid of that stuff. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, DJ, again. Thank you. Thank you.